You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to what promises to be a most memorable hour, not just of tonight's live broadcast, but for, I think, our entire broadcasting year. This is something, again, like the hour we had just a moment ago with Adrian Davis talking about the French election, something that I have had in mind to do for a few weeks, and that is have Charles Balsman back. Of course, Charles is the editor-in-chief of Russia Insider, and we'll give you that contact information in just a moment. And we are going to have him back, but with a twist. TPC fan favorite Sam Dixon is appearing tonight, not as a guest, but rather as a guest host. And he's going to be conducting the large part of this interview with Charles Balsman, who we'll get to in just a moment. But first, let's say hello to Sam and welcome him back to the program. And Sam, tell us a little bit about that music selection to lead us into this enthralling hour of talk radio.
We opened with a rousing rendition by St. Petersburg Choir of God Save the Tsar. And it's nice that we live in a world now where that can be publicly performed in the former Soviet Union.
Indeed, and it was a most fitting selection, to be sure. So Sam has spent time in Russia and is very much a student of Russian history and very invested in this issue. And with that said, let's introduce our guest of the evening for this hour, the main guest of the program tonight. In fact, Charles Balsman of Russia Insider, back there live from Russia for another thoughtful and fact-based follow-up conversation about the ongoing situation in Ukraine. And we'll get to that and much more. It's another honest inquiry, the likes of which others in the media are either refusing or unable to have. And we thank both Sam and Charles for being with us tonight to make it possible. Charles, how are you?
James, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Sam, nice to talk to you again. It's been a while.
The pleasure is all mine.
Charles, I would just ask this one question, Sam, and then I'm turning it over to you, my friend. Charles, you were last on with us, as I mentioned, back in March. So obviously the situation has developed. Things have continued to materialize and play out. My only question for you tonight really is, how have things progressed since you were last on with this audience?
Well, you know, it's gone a lot slower. I remember that conversation we had, and I was extremely bullish and optimistic that that Russia would win that conflict in a matter of weeks, and that's what most people were expecting. And it's actually taking much longer, but it's still completely going Russia's way. So everybody was saying that Russia's going to, you know, including the general staff of the U.S. Army was saying that there was no way the Ukrainians could hold out for more than a month. So it's taking a lot longer than anybody thought, but still it seems like the Russians are doing extremely well, and actually Ukraine is on the verge of collapse. Their army in the east is really not doing well at all, and there have been many, many setbacks this week.
Sam, I turn the program over to you.
All right. Well, Charles, I'm happy to speak with you again. I'm an admirer of you and Russia Insider, and I'm a great admirer of the Russian people and their culture. I was an admirer of Russians long before the fall of the Soviet Union. I was an admirer from childhood, and I have enjoyed reading their books and their literature, and I think most Americans have found their lives greatly enriched by Russian culture. The Russians are an exceptional people, and I envy you for being able to spend much of your life in Moscow. I've been to Russia several times, but I will never have the pleasure of actually living there, which I would have liked to have done for at least an extended period of time. So,
well,
that's
never it. Say never. Never say never.
Okay, well, maybe someday. But you live in Moscow, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And do you have any ethnic connections to Russia?
I do not, no. I'm purely German and English background. And the way I ended up here was my dad, who's a Pennsylvania German, you know, all-American guy, worked here as a journalist in the late 60s, early 70s. So my family always had a connection here. And I spent time here as a small child when he was...
You know, my Russian tutor told me when I was young that there is a natural affinity between Germans and Russians, which he says does not exist between Russians and Anglo-Saxons or Russians and Frenchmen. And she said that the two world wars were aberrations in a general pattern in which Germans and Slavs have interfaced well. And we certainly hope that day will come back again.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And a lot of Russians talk about this, and a lot of historical analysts and political theorists say that it has always been the strategy of the globalists and the Anglos to do everything they can to have the Germans and Russians fighting with each other, because if they were ever to get together and really cooperate on the world stage, there'd be no stopping them. So it's like,
well, that's not only that,
it's a policy priority for yeah. You know.
Well, when you read European history, you know that the when Germany, Austria, Hungary, and Russia had their alliance after the Napoleonic Wars, it helped foment almost a century of peace in Europe. And it was a very good thing for our race. I think I like to take a long approach in this interview. I thought we would start out rather than with the immediate, we move from the general to the immediate. It seems to me that a thoughtful American, a real American, a white European American, not the globalists or the hyphenated Americans that run our State Department and skew our policy to benefit their real nation, there's every reason why we should be grateful for the existence of Russia and wish for her to flourish. Russia serves as the guardian of the gates. She guards Siberia against 1.5 billion non-whites who would like to have Russia and Siberia, Russia, and really most of Europe. Have you any thoughts about that?
You know, that's absolutely correct. It's just a self-inflicted wound on the West to attack and hurt Russia, because it's very interesting. You know, even Putin has spoken about this very clearly and very, very dramatically over the last 3 or 4 months as this war fever accelerated. And he basically said, look, guys, we're it. Like, we're the last stand here. If we go down, you know, what European civilization is finished.
Gentlemen, we're going to take our first break of the evening, but don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, we have only whetted your appetite. Sam Dixon hosting this hour with Charles Balsman of RussiaInsider.com. That is Russia-Insider.com. Some great and very well-read content there. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you missed Charles's appearance back in March, it was just a couple of weeks after the development of the hostilities there in Eastern Europe. It was the broadcast for March the 19th, and it was really a highlight in a month of programming that is a highlight for me, that March Around the World series that we do. And in preparing for that interview with Charles, I'd asked both Mark Weber, who coincidentally will be appearing in the third hour tonight, just a little bit later this evening, and Sam, to send some questions for Charles, because, of course, they're such learned scholars. And for one reason or another, I did not see Sam's until after we had taped that program. And so I knew we would have Charles back on later, and I had intended to let Sam's line of questioning be really at the forefront of that, because they were great questions. But then I got a better idea. Why not we just have Sam on himself and host the program? So that's what we're doing. Gentlemen, back over to you, Sam.
Well, Charles, you were saying about Putin having recognized the fact that Russia defends all of Europe and America against the tremendous demographic, our foremost demographic competitors in the world, 1.5 billion highly intelligent, ambitious Chinese. Why do you think America and its European satellites, like the so-called German Republic, why do they not recognize this and act on it?
Because I think that, our government is basically run by sort of insane messianic ideologues who want to run the whole world. And the two big power blocks that are in their way are Russia and China. And I don't see the European governments as being in any way independent. I mean, they're basically, I think the right word for them is vassals, and they'll just do whatever, you know, Washington tells them to. So unfortunately, the people who rule Western Europe and the people who rule our country, our great country, are criminals and crazy, and they're driving our countries towards a disaster. And they would like to start a big war with Russia. That's the scary thing. Like, there's this whole wing of the people who make foreign policy in Washington who would be very happy if this this expanded in NATO and got really ugly and was World War III.
I hear the word crazy used often to apply to these people that misrule us, and I'm not sure that's correct. I don't think they're crazy. I think they just have an agenda that suits their ethnic group and does not suit our own. You know, early in our history, you had a foreign policy based on two principles, on non-involvement, staying out of foreign quarrels, as enunciated by George Washington, and trying to keep potentially hostile nations out of our back door, and our neighbors. And that's the Monroe Doctrine. And this was a sound Anglo-Saxon, European-American policy. But the people that run us are not European Americans, and they have another policy, and their policy has superseded our policy. And that policy is to help their native state of Israel and to aggressively follow ethnic grudges. That's at least my opinion. And certainly I think that there has been a long-standing ethnic grudge against Russia and Russians, except for the period when Russia was under their control under communism. But you know, do you have any thoughts on that? Is that too extreme or too simplistic a view?
No, I would agree with that entirely. And when I use the word crazy, you're right. Crazy is a very broad, sort of all-encompassing term, right? You know, what they are determined to try and control everything and everybody, and so in that sense they're crazy. And you know, I'm a religious person and a Christian person, and so I think one really has to, in my opinion, you can't really understand what's happening without taking it into account, like the effect of the demonic. And I think some of these people are just demonically possessed, and they know very well that millions of people could die in a huge World War III, and that suits them just fine. And I don't even think they, you know, it's not even so much the interest of Israel that motivates them. I think they're thinking on a much bigger scale, and they've got some sort of global agenda, and they want to run everything, and they're willing to kill millions of people to make it happen.
They seem to be consumed with hate. Hate seems to motivate them. I mean, they still hate the United States, even though this has been the greatest country for them in world history. That hasn't lessened their hatred for the American people and the Christian demographic founding stock of the American people. It hasn't impacted them at all. And you don't need to enter into conjectures to find out about their indifference to the loss of human life. Madeleine Albright, our foreign-born, non-American, non-Christian Secretary of State, was asked about the 500,000 Iraqi children who died as a result of the American sanctions against Iraq. As you will probably know, she sneeringly dismissed these 500,000 children's lives as mere collateral damage to her foreign policy.
Yeah, she specifically said she thought it was worth it that they died in order to pursue freedom and democracy in Europe or whatever she thought she was doing in the Middle East. Sam, you asked about this an ethnic grudge by Jewish Americans towards Russians, there very much is one. But again, I understand this in a Christian sense, and the grudge goes back to the Russian Empire when, again, the Jewish people in the Russian Empire, they hated that government and they hated the monarchy and the Tsar and everything like that. And it wasn't because they were badly treated, because they weren't. That's a big canard. And there were no, like, all these pogroms are completely exaggerated, and really the Jewish people lived very well in the Russian Empire right up until the end. In fact, they were so successful there that they were instrumental in bringing about the revolution. But they nonetheless hated their own country, similar to the way that a lot of, you know, far out liberals hate the United States today. I mean, they were the same people in the Russian Empire who today in the U.S. would be the ones saying that, you know, that our country is built on slavery and hatred and inequality and racism, and we've got to tear everything down and be like, you know, cultural Maoists. And that's what they were doing in Russia in the 19th century leading up to the revolution. And they completely destroyed the country.
Many, many things to say about that. My Russian tutor's uncle had been the procurator of the Ukraine, basically the district attorney of Ukraine under the Tsar. And she told me that the pogroms, she said the pogroms consisted of some drunken peasants throwing a brick through a Jewish shop's window. And by the time it got to New York and Berlin and London, it was in the papers. It was a massacre in which hundreds of Jews had been killed by the Tsar's own Cossacks. As you pointed out, the obvious, that the Cossacks were policemen, and the Tsar was trying to win over the middle class, as well to strengthen his dynasty, and not rest it any longer solely upon the aristocracy. And the Russian insurance companies would have to pay if these mobs were allowed to go around burning things down. This would have harmed the Russian economy, and no reason whatever for the Tsar do anything but to enforce law and order, and that's what he did. He protected the Jews.
That brings something up here. You know, people talk about Trump talks about the lying media and the lying New York Times and everything like this, and people have really been talking a lot about it over the last whatever it is, 8 years, and people think it's sort of a new phenomenon, and it's not at all. It's been going on. It's just the media has been lying to the public. I mean, and really in the most egregious and shameless way for 150 years, at least. Yeah, about 150 years, ever since basically, newspapers emerged as a mass media, like the whole thing. And they were incredibly mendacious in the Russian Empire against their own government, against the Tsar, whipping up the population to have support for the revolution, and it's an ongoing thing. It's not new, basically.
Hold on right there, Sam Dixon and Charles Balsman, Russia-Insider.com. As I listen to these two incredible gentlemen live on your radio tonight, I am there in the studio at that website. We'll be right back with both.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
On day 99 of Russia's invasion into Ukraine, President Zelensky has claimed 243 children have been killed by Russia's military, and 200,000 children have been forcibly taken to Russia, including children from orphanages and those separated from their families. Water restrictions began Wednesday for 6 million residents in Southern California as the state enters its third year of severe drought. Technically, most of Southern California is considered a desert. Residents and businesses must limit their outdoor watering to 1 or 2 days per week or to a set volume of water. Oaxaca, Mexico Governor Alejandro Murat says at least 11 people have died and 33 more are missing from Oaxaca after Hurricane Agatha brought deadly flooding and landslides. Agatha, the strongest hurricane to hit Mexico's Pacific coast in the month of May, hit land as a Category 2 Monday. USA Radio News.
Paid for by GovMint.com. Have you heard? The United States Mint has issued the Morgan Silver Dollar for the first time in 100 years. Not only that, but they are also minted in 99.9% pure silver for the first time ever in history. Coin experts are calling this an amazing opportunity for anyone that knows the enduring popularity of Morgans. But you must hurry. Only 175,000 legal tender silver dollars were issued. These Morgan Silver Dollars are brand new, bright and shiny legal tender coins minted by the iconic Philadelphia Mint. Just call 1-800-888-7630 and you are guaranteed a new 99.9% pure silver Morgan dollar. The first time in history this has happened. But with limited quantities, you must call now to order. To learn more, call 1-800-888-7630. If you order now, you will receive a free collector bonus, a $25 value free with every order. Call 1-800-888-7630 now to secure your new Morgan silver dollars before they are gone. That's 1-800-888-7630.
A 9-year-old girl is recovering at a hospital in Washington State after being attacked by a cougar while playing hide-and-seek outdoors with her friends. The girl, Lily, was attacked Saturday as she jumped out to surprise her friends. The attack happened at a camp near Fruitland, about 70 miles from Spokane. The president continues to remain without answers to America's major inflation problems.
We can't take immediate action that I'm aware of yet to figure out how we bring down the price of gasoline back to $3 a gallon. And we can't do that immediately with regard to food prices either.
President Biden's comments as more Americans are becoming increasingly concerned about rising prices for food and gas. Critics argue the president could lower gas prices in the United States by reversing some of his energy policies, restricting the production of oil and gas in the United States. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg,
USA Radio News.
You may not be able to understand the lyrics of that hymn, but perhaps Charles and Sam do. They do speak Russian, but that is Charles was mentioning the topic of faith in the previous segment. Not only is he guest hosting the program this hour, Sam Dixon has also provided some of the musical selections. That is a beautiful Christian hymn. Sam will tell you a little bit more about it before we toss it back to he and Charles. Sam?
Its title in Russian is Kol Slavya Nash Gospodzione. And it was the unofficial hymn of the White Armies that fought against Lenin and the non-Russians who seized control of Russia in the Communist Revolution in 1917. It's a beautiful hymn. It's found in the Presbyterian and Episcopal hymnals, a very good translation under the name, the title, How Glorious Is Our God in Zion, which is the exact title of the end of the
It really does sound like a great Anglican hymn, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
It's one of my favorites. It's a great, great song. Yeah.
Yeah. One of everyone's criticism about me as a member of the Church of Scotland, a Presbyterian, I have the Anglican Church. Their music, it doesn't include their music. Their music is always perfect. So, getting back to the subject at hand of Russia, it's. Does it strike you how different our policies, the government's policies toward Russia have been, contrasting the policies toward the Tsar when we were basically, the American system was unfriendly, to affectionate connections with the Soviet Union during World War II, and covertly affectionate, I think, afterwards, and now the hostility to a free Russia? Am I mistaken in perceiving that our policy has been all over the waterfront, and the only consistent thing has been that it's been opposed to any loyal, truly Russian Christian government?
You're absolutely right about that, and it is one of the great sort of ironies, right, that there was actually quite a lot of U.S. support for the Soviet Union over its entire history, and a lot of... a lot of ideological sympathy, where American academia and, the sort of chattering classes would repeat Soviet propaganda and lies about their history and so on and so forth. And so in that sense, they were very, very close. And although they were ostensible enemies on the global stage, they also, I think, were very comfortable with the situation that evolved, that they had this nice big Cold War, and they had an enemy, and they kind of helped each other out, and it was all a very sort of I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of world during this.
Yeah, they were able together, like two millstones grinding against each other, they were able to use the communist threat, which they claimed they were fighting, so as to grind the European countries into powder. The European countries were told that they had to give up their empires and abandon all their colonies and all this, because the world would turn communist if the whites didn't get out, and things like that. And it was used even here in America. I remember there used to be pictures and signs up showing people beating up a black person, white guys beating up a black person, and they would say, what do people in Japan think when they see a picture like this? And a lot of our civil rights stuff was justified, that we had to do this to win the affection of the Third World, or they would go communist. And that was a great argument that allowed people to give up their own ways of life in America, so as to further our foreign policy. But the epitome of the chummy relationship between the U.S. and the Soviet Union naturally was Yalta, which was an extraordinary thing, where Roosevelt, Roosevelt's wife, saying that Stalin still retained the imprint of the seminary he had attended as a youth, and that he was he personified the Christian gentleman. You know, anyway, but then you know the friendly relations seem to have continued. I mentioned while we're on our break. I mentioned that when the Soviet Union was melting down, the American policy was to keep it together. And Bush the first went to Kiev, where he gave a speech saying that Ukraine should remain part of the Soviet Union. It should not become independent. Now that the Soviet Union is gone, the United States in 2014, as you know, went around the globe, the country on the other side of the globe, a situation we have no business, and we instigated the overthrow of the Ukrainian government for the open reason that that government was friendly toward its neighbor, the Russians.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the policy of the United States ever since the Soviet Union collapsed has been to try and weaken and undermine and subvert Russia, and it's considering how weak the those states were that came out of the collapse of the Soviet Union, and how powerful the U.S. was at the time, especially economically. It's kind of it's amazing that the U.S. lost control of the situation, and now they're dealing with a resurgent and self-confident Russia, which is standing its ground, and not going along with the U.S. globalist thing. And you know, Bush, I think perhaps the reason Bush was saying that is because there's a very strong anti-Russian nationalism in the Ukraine, and maybe his advisors were telling him, "Look, you got to try and tamp this down a little bit because it's really dangerous." And that anti-Russian nationalism is another thing that has been, you know, nurtured and cultivated and developed by American foreign policy ever since the end of World War II, as an anti-communist strategy. And then for 100 years before that, it was an anti-Russian strategy conducted by the Germans and the Austro-Hungarians and the British. So it has a long, subverting Ukraine to try and hurt Russia has a very long history. And it's something that isn't talked about in the West, but the Russians talk about it all the time.
Well, it's a tragedy. It's like the efforts that to inflame the feelings between among the Irish, the Scots, and the English. We live in a world in which only the devil can benefit from quarrels among the Irish, the Scots, and the Irish. It's the same way in fomenting and stirring up hatred between two people who are almost identical, the Malarus, the Little Russians, as my Russian tutor would call them, and now called Ukrainians, and the Russians. You know, these people differ from each other probably less than Scots differ from Englishmen.
Correct. Certainly linguistically, for heaven's sakes.
their religion, is the same. Their race is the same. Their languages are mutually unintelligible. Russia's first capital was in Kiev. There's absolutely no point in these people being hostile to each other, except to benefit people who hate white Christian Europeans at large.
Absolutely. And you've got to look at who's running Ukraine, who's been running the Ukraine for the last 30 years. It's such a contrast to Russia, but it's similar in some ways. So Russia's been, since the Soviet Union, has been 30 years. For the first 10 years, it was run by criminal oligarchs. These were brutal, evil, deceitful
non-Russian
people who were just stripping the country, and yet they were 90% Jewish. Yeah, and the reason they were so successful in snapping up all the country's assets was because they could more easily access Jewish capital around the world, and so buy all this stuff up on the cheap. But then Sheriff Putin came to town and cleaned up Dodge. Basically, is the very simple version of what happened. And that was a big shock, and it was totally unexpected. In Ukraine, that never happened. So those same people who were running the Russia in those first 10 years, they've been in Ukraine for 30 years. And that you can't imagine, like, the contrast in the two countries describes it all, because over the last 20 years, the Russians have had a pro-Russian nationalist government that's trying to do the best for the Russian people. Whereas in the Ukraine, you've had a bunch of hucksters who are intent on just ripping everybody off and stripping the country of anything valuable. And so their economy is a disaster, whereas the Russian economy is actually quite strong.
What a real honor it is, ladies and gentlemen, to host a program that can make available to you guests like this on a platform like this. And we're going to take our final break of the hour. Sam Bushman, guest hosting this hour, along with Charles Bosman of Russia Insider. Be sure to check it out. We'll be right back.
American Freedom News is your daily one-stop website that will keep you fully informed. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of the big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as it provides truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first and in the historic American nation. Many Americans are finally waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America and Western civilization can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
Такое, что жить, ой, жизнью моей не объять, и станет спокойно, и сладко, как в детстве, когда обнимала меня моя мать, и станет спокойно. И сладко, как в детстве, когда обнимала меня моя мать.
That is a quartet of beautiful Russian women, and a song and a video that you can watch on YouTube that I picked up and found at RussiaInsider.com just here as we are listening to this wonderful interview being conducted by Sam Dixon of Charles Bosman. Charles, that is, I found it at your website, so you probably already know, a Russian folk group whose the name of the group literally translates into white gold. And if you want to learn more about the Russian people and Russian culture, Russia-Insider.com is the place to do it. Charles Bosman joining us live from Russia tonight. We appreciate him for making the arrangements. Mark Weber will be with us in the third hour. You've already heard from Adrian Davis tonight. If we had just Adrian or just Mark on the program, it would be a can't-miss show. These are literally two of the best analysts and commentators we've got. But you add to that this little twist tonight with Sam Dixon and Charles Bosman And I think this is something that everybody's going to enjoy and look back on. I have one question for each of you, and then I'll turn the final 10 minutes back over to you, Sam, and Charles, as we've been conducting it thus far. But, Sam, I would ask you this. Why is Russia so important? Is Russia the key to white survival? And you've had a lifelong affinity for the nation and its people. Tell us why, and let's limit these answers to maybe 60 seconds. Just a quick hit.
Well, very quick. My affinity is, of course, just irrational, as all such affinities are. When I was a young child, I was looking at Life magazine, and I saw, very young, I saw pictures of Onion Dome churches and this sort of thing. This was about 1953, and I just immediately loved the pictures. And from then on, I've always been fascinated by Russia. Russia is critically important to the white race and the Christian community. It controls one-sixth of the globe. And it colonized Siberia. The Russians, like the Anglo-Saxons, were the supreme colonists for our race around the world. They are the guardians of the gates against the Chinese, who will always be a demographic rival for us. And they want peace with us. There's no reason why we cannot have good relations with Russia. We have no territorial conflicts. Despite the Cold War, we've never had a war against each other. And our economies are complementary. They need our exports. We need their exports. And we have a government there that is very different from the Soviet government that from Roosevelt and Eisenhower and Kennedy and the others were so fond of. We have a government that is now in keeping with the old Russia. And all over Russia, the churches have been rebuilt. The cathedrals have been rebuilt. The number of people who believe in God has gone up from some 30% to about 70-80%. None of this is revealed to the American people. But if Putin would be like Angela Merkel, if he would be like Stalin and be destroying the churches and be colonizing Russia with non-whites and adopt the kind of anti-white, anti-Christian policies that have always directed the Washington government, at least since the time of President Taft, then Putin would be made, his face would be on Time magazine as Man of the Year, and he would be celebrated.
That's right. You nailed it. I mean, that's exactly right. And a wonderful piece of commentary there. Charles, my question to you, and then back to Sam. And, well, you can actually answer this and toss it back to Sam yourself. I do you a disservice by even asking it. As volatile as the situation is, it sets up a guest up to fail to predict what's going to happen in the near term in Russia as this thing continues to flesh itself out. I do appreciate you coming on to give us the perspective of someone who is actually living there to answer these questions. I think that is, of course, quite valuable. But you look at the news, and it's really hard to determine what's happening. According to our press, Putin has every cancer known to man. He doesn't have really control of his mental faculties, very much unlike Joe Biden, who's obviously very healthy and with it. But what's happening over there, and how do you think it's going to go over the next few months and the remainder of this year, Charles?
Okay, well, listen, everything you read about what's happening here in the war in the mainstream media or on the TV is just assume that it's just a complete and absolute lie. And it's probably 90% certain that the exact 180-degree opposite is the truth. And that's the advice I would give to Americans who are trying to sort this thing out. Look, they've been lying just shamelessly and embarrassingly about everything ever since this thing started. And honestly, all this money that's being sent to the Ukraine, I'm absolutely convinced that most of it is getting stolen. And that's the only reason it's being sent there. Everybody understands that it's completely hopeless and it's not going to change anything. And it's not. I mean, the Ukrainian army is in the process of completely collapsing in the East. And once that happens, it's not going to have much fight left for the West. So basically, Russians are going to win this thing. And all that money is basically being stolen.
Or
being passed back to U.S. weapons manufacturers just as sort of kickbacks. And it's really incredibly disgusting and corrupt.
$40 billion, I think, was the so-called aid package to Ukraine. You could have certainly built that border wall that Trump talked about for $40 billion. I believe you could have done that. Sam, not enough time for a conversation like this. We really could have gone the entire hour. But with about 6 minutes remaining, how best could we take advantage of the time left? Sam, it's yours.
Well, I think first we should note, again, that it's the United States that went around the world in order to install a government in Ukraine hostile to its neighbor. And we did that in 2014. We have the intercepted words of the Jewish Secretary of State, who's now back with Biden, Victoria Nuland, in which he said we were going to pick out their president. What's the point of that? Does that help Ukrainians? Would it help Canadians if somebody installed, overturned the historically friendly relations between America and Canada? If to impose a government in Canada that would be confrontational and hostile to the United States? No. Obviously, it's in the interest of Canadians and Americans, Canadians living next to a colossal power, to be cordial and friendly. And that's the case with Ukraine. So we created this situation, and we should be the last people on earth to be self-righteous about the Russians trying to install a government that will restore friendly relations between these two kindred people. But my question to Charles is, what's the end game here? How do we get out of this? This war will have given all kinds of grist to the mill of those who seek to create ill will between kindred white nations. There will be obviously enormous hatred and anger toward the Russians for this, what's happened in this invasion. And if the Russians withdraw, from now on, there'll be no problem with having a native government in Ukraine that will be hostile to Russia, especially if they've split off the eastern section, where you have voters who are Russian and who would send delegates to the Ukrainian parliament for Russia. What is the exit plan?
Well, I think the exit plan is very clear, that the Russians are going to prosecute this war right down to the end, and they're going to basically depose the Ukrainian government. And I think they're going to take Kiev. I think they're going to take, you know, most of the country. They might leave a Western rump state there as a buffer kind of thing. But if they do allow it to exist, they'll insist that it be not a demilitarized. They won't be allowed to have an army. And so that's what Russia is going to do. And they're going to do it realistically in the next couple of months. And the only thing that could stop them at this point is if NATO gets involved, and if it expands into a European-wide NATO conflict with NATO, which is a very real possibility. So that's the real danger. And, you know, Sam, I think the truth has the truth comes out. And so the U.S. government has been spending the last 2 months insisting that Russia's losing, that that their army is completely bogged down, that if we send Ukrainians more weapons, that they have a good chance of winning. That this war could go on for years and so on and so forth. Those are all lies, and they're all deliberate lies in order to sell the idea to Congress of sending that money over there so that it could be stolen, basically. So it's all very cynical, and it's all very embarrassing, but the truth will come out, and Americans are going to see this. And they're going to be furious. I think they're going to be furious at their government.
Charles, but that's requiring an awful lot from an American people that for many generations now have shown themselves to be happy supporters of a government that hates them.
Well, I mean, furious the way they were after Afghanistan. I think the situation is very reminiscent to what happened in Afghanistan, where there was just complete, you know, wrong predictions about what was happening, what really happened. And then, oh, guess what? Oh, you know, $100 billion worth of weapons just disappeared. Oh, I wonder how that happened and who it got sold to and so on and so forth.
Well, if you were running the military-industrial complex in America, would it make sense to let all those weapons fall in the hands of terrorists so there can be more Muslim terrorism and justify bigger military budgets?
Little less than 2 minutes remaining, guys. Charles?
Absolutely. I think that's part of the plan. And in the Ukraine, it's part of the plan is that they're sending a lot of stuff over there that's, you know, 20, 30 years old, all these old Stingers and stuff that aren't making a big difference. But it allows the American weapons manufacturers to renew their inventory and get rid of a bunch of old stuff they're never going to use anyway.
The idea that this stuff is just left there is absurd. I don't know if you were ever in the military, but I was in the military. And when you get 10 hearing aids or earplugs, from supply, you have to sign a statement for them, and you have to account for them. Every transfer of equipment is scrupulously documented. It's virtually impossible that they could have just all just gotten on their helicopters and gone away without any attempt to disable or destroy or take that stuff with them. It's just absurd.
Gentlemen, that will have to be the final word, but it won't be the last you hear from Charles Balsman. I assure you that. Russia-Insider.com. Again, Charles, appearing live from Russia tonight. We really appreciate it. Sam, thank you for taking the reins and hosting this hour. I think it was something wonderfully different, and I enjoyed it as a listener, and I know that our audience will have as well. So we'll be back with Mark Weber. Godspeed to you both, gentlemen, and we will talk again soon. Stay tuned for the third hour, everybody else.
Thank you. Take care.